Our next speaker this morning will be Robert Heiber on a new process for correcting WoW and Flutter artifacts. Bob's been involved in film sound preservation since 1990 when he joined Chase Productions, which he's now president, a member of the Association of Moving Image Archivists since 1991, SMPTE, the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences, and recently ARSC. Bob has also served on the National Film Preservation Board Advisory Task Force and the Library of Congress panel for the State of American Television and Video Preservation. He's spoken on film sound preservation, restoration, and remastering at AMIA, ACVL, SMPTE, and ARSC conferences. Prior to joining Chase, Bob was the manager of technical operations at Warner Hollywood Studios and an award-winning documentary industrial filmmaker in Chicago, Illinois. Bob graduated from Purdue University in 1973 with a Bachelor of Arts in Radio, TV, and Film. So, Bob?
Hi, Patrick. Thanks. You didn't take any shots at me. Patrick's an Indiana University graduate. There's only a small rivalry, I think, between our universities.
That's pretty big.
A small, big rivalry.
Let's see. We need to get up my PowerPoint, and if this mouse isn't working, I need a... It's like it locked up, huh?
Yeah, I couldn't get the mouse to do a thing.
Hey, is Billy here? Where's my man? Kurt? Yeah, I need to find my icon here to launch the PowerPoint. And it looks like it was working good this morning, guys, when we tested it.
Isn't that always the way?
Is there a keyboard combination?
Well, besides being from Purdue, I'm also a Macintosh user.
How about trying this as an alternative until you get
it? We got it.
Oh, hi,
there he is. There's the man.
Okay, so now where's the icon for the... I got to launch my...
Okay, escape.
Yeah, all right.
Excuse me.
Escape. It's not you, right?
No. I had the little Bob Heiber icon on the desktop. Hmm? There it is. Cool.
There you are, sir.
Thank you, Chris. And so I actually would say thanks to Chris and Billy, who are running the audiovisual, and the ARSC for inviting us here today. We're very fortunate. Jamie Howarth, who is a developer of this product, is here with us today, and Jamie's going to be able to answer the questions and also play a couple really neat new demonstrations of some of the way this technology is working. And let's see if we get started. So I want to talk about a unique new technology. And I'd like to say that we have this really new tool that's very powerful. And we're also going to look at something kind of theoretical, which is this idea of what is really analog degradation of our material. So I'd like to say this is a balanced program. I kind of have the meat and the potatoes today. And if you need to contact me, there's some of my contact information. So let's talk a little bit about the correction of WoW and Flutter artifacts. Of course, we know that when we talk about WoW and Flutter, we're talking about machine instability. And the Audio Engineering Society, it's another pretty good group, defines WoW as things that are from a half a cycle to 4 cycles per second in a variation. And Flutter, then, is anything that's faster than 4 cycles per second. And anything less than a half a cycle, the AES classifies as just drift. So I know you guys are all pretty experts in what we're talking about, but I have a couple of examples I always like to just get people started with. We also like to check our sound. I bring out a little bit of a multimedia extravaganza. So the first thing I want you to hear is, of course, an example of WoW. And in the motion picture industry, where we do a lot of our work, telephone rings, old telephone rings, are just a huge bust for WoW. And when it plays by itself, it's very apparent. But oftentimes, you have more complicated backgrounds. So these are a couple sound effects we put together. The other is a harbor background, big wash of noise, sounds. I mean, you can't tell much of what's going on. But in the harbor, then, there are buoys. Not buoys, but buoys rocking back and forth in the water, and the bell on the buoys is what gives away the WoW in this track. So if we could play number one. flipping stuff.
Okay.
We turn it up just a little bit.
Oh, I see.
So, of course, you hear the big wash of noise. You don't hear much going on, but that buoy in there is just like, whoa, it does seasick. Now, flutter is a little bit more different, and I was having a hard time trying to find an example, and I just happened to be watching Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and the sound effects designer, to create a disorienting sound effect, created this great flutter sound effect, which was just like perfect. So this is not a flaw. This was an intentional design. But it really gives you a great idea of what flutter can do to a track, because when that starts to move around, it'll actually modulate the audio. And this sound effect gives a great example of that. So that's number two.
You stole your underwear.
I don't see anyone.
That's it. So as you guys hear how the dialogue was all fluttering around, it's a pretty good little sound. I'd love to know how he created that one, because it's pretty good. So let's talk a little bit about this clarity process and how we can fix it. Really, the neat part about this is it's a retiming of the audio, and it's a novel method. And what we're doing here is we're looking for high-frequency information that is already on the magnetic media, whether it be audio tape or magnetic sound film. And then, as Jamie's going to explain, even there's now some other new processes where we can track other recorded information that we use for timing and to create a timing content, a constant. The idea here is that, you know, one of these high frequency like bias or recording logic circuitry, very high frequency information, 40,000 to 450,000 hertz. So it gives us very fine and precise measurements upon which we can do some of this kind of correction. Now, as we all know, there's a number of engineers here. No technology would be worth anything if it didn't have some cool hardware. So of course this does. And what we have here, and thanks, Richard, for loaning us your laser pointer. Is it right there? It was. I thought I saw something. Well,
anyway.
In the boxes, you can see we have a special, in the circle, a custom magnetic sound head that fits on our magnetic film dubber. And then this very bright yellow box, which is really the box that helps us extract the high-frequency ultrasonic information. It's basically considered a mixing box. It's a direct contact from the head to this custom set of electronics that allows us to capture the high-frequency information. Now, what's going on with all of this? Well, here's a kind of a simple block diagram as to what we have. Yeah, sure, if you want to. Oh, that's a good one. Thank you. So this area here is really the transfer process. We have the ultrasonic frequencies that are on our tape, goes through that nice yellow box, analog to digital conversion, audio is coming along in the same pathway, and now we have a data file with the information, and here's where the secret of the sauce is. Here in this, there we go, this right here is the DSP that makes this the magic happen. When we have the ultrasonic information, you can see that in a wild recording, the timing constant, the high frequency information, is not going to be evenly spaced. So here it's closer together because it's going fast, here it's farther apart because it's going slow. And then really the novel part of the Clarity DSP is it learns, takes a sample of what the good constant is, learns what the mistake was, plots the inverse of it, and then ties it all together to make perfectly spaced timing constants with the audio tied to it. And of course, it's pretty logical, sounds great, but the trick is, of course, as you know, when you start manipulating samples in the digital world, you have to have some pretty powerful algorithms to do that seamlessly and without any artifacts. And therein kind of is the secret of the sauce. Right now, well, we have the capability in the film sound world and recorded sound world of handling primarily quarter-inch and half-inch audio tape and 35 millimeter magnetic sound film. But of course, as Jamie's going to tell you, there's also some new advances he's done with his technology to work with material that doesn't have necessarily those same kind of timing constants, and hopefully we're going to get a chance to listen to some of that too. Want to give you an example of, of how this actually fixes it. So the first thing we're going to go back to is the sound effects demo that we prepared with the wow and the telephone and the harbor background, and we're going to now play that again, and you're going to hear how the process corrects it. Now, just want you to know, we actually made up these sound effects. We had the bell, we wowed our tape, our mag machine as we made the recording, played it back, captured it, and then sent it out to Jamie for processing. So this should be number three. So the part I like particularly about the harbor background is, you know, it's kind of a complex sound, and the wash of noise isn't really impacted at all by the processing, and yet we've managed to straighten out those buoys in the way they were wowing in the track, which is, I think, really an important part of what this process can do. In other words, it's not just fixing a simple single sound. We can fix that within a whole complex series of sounds. But that's kind of the parlor tricks, if you will. What happens in the real world? Well, this is a great example. It was one of those magic days in film sound restoration when we opened up a box of film and actually found a 35-millimeter three-track stereo recording of Leonard Bernstein's score for On the Waterfront, which was a unique find. It's the only film score that Leonard Bernstein ever recorded. And we assumed that actually the tracks were perfectly recorded. But over time, the film has developed shrinkage and warpage and now is unstable in its playback, or unstable. And even with the best transfer we could make, we still had sound instability, and we're going to give you an example of what that sounds like right now. Just to help out, a lot of times we have people who aren't quite as sophisticated in hearing have just the close-up of that one really sour note. And again, the neat part here is we think it was a good recording. It's really the material itself has deteriorated and is causing this problem. Next little piece goes into, again, a little bit of more complex sound. We have a six track from The Agony and the Ecstasy, and in this, again, it was a question of probably a bad dubber, because here we have a great open hall sound, lots of reverb, we have dialogue, and the part that was making the restoration engineers unhappy was this kind of Renaissance underscore that was just moving around and making everyone nauseous. So we applied the process to it, and here's what we get. Now, we're only going to give you the center channel because, you know, when you get into a venue like this, you can never tell what you'll be able to have. So you only have center channel of these stereo tracks.
Would you refuse me what you did not refuse the bankers and politicians of Florence? Can it be that you are afraid? Do you doubt your ability to complete such a task?
I'm not afraid, Holiness, but... Nothing, Holy Father.
Very well. You will paint the 12 apostles on the ceiling and decorate the vault with appropriate designs. Would you refuse me what you did not refuse the bankers and politicians of Florence? Can it be that you are afraid? Do you doubt your ability to complete such a task?
I'm not afraid, Holiness, but... Nothing, Holy Father.
Very well. You will paint the 12 apostles on the ceiling and decorate the vault with appropriate designs.
Now, what was interesting to us when we processed this little piece is that one line where Charlton Heston says, "Nothing, Holy Father." I mean, it's kind of obsequious, and it's caught in his throat, and it's kind of low, but the before and after that, it was just like it was just a little bit more clear and a little more present in the track. And so we'll just give you a close-up of that.
Nothing, Holy Father. Nothing, Holy Father.
Just seemed a little bit more present, and yet it didn't seem to change the performance. So we kind of got wondering, well, what's really going on here? And this really brings us to the potatoes part of the presentation. And we're going to talk a little bit about analog signal degradation. Of course, historically, we've always blamed analog signal degradation on either the electronics that we've been using or the media that we've been recording to. But I think we'd all agree that certainly from the mid-70s and on with solid-state electronics and really the well-defined manufacturer of magnetic media, these are really pretty high-quality media to record to. And so, you know, still, why doesn't that copy sound as good as my original master? Another fact is we know as engineers that we can electronically use our alignment tapes and set zero in and zero out, and so we think, you know, we're getting pretty good electronic reproduction here. So what's going on? Well, there's no question that every analog transport ever built has wow and flutter. And how do we know it? Unfortunately, the manufacturers are only too happy to specify it because they understand that it's just a fact of the process. Every bearing, every motor, every roller has the opportunity to create some form of instability. And here's just some of the specifications from half a dozen of the machines that we have at our shop. We're going to talk about really two issues that became made known to me and I got excited about. And these are called the fast flutter artifacts. And the first being scrape flutter, which happens when you take that nice piece of audio tape that looks so nice and shiny and smooth, but really is a bunch of very fine sandpaper going over a steel head. And as it does, it creates a microstriction right here on the steel heads. And that can actually create a vibration on the tape, creating a fast flutter artifact that will modulate the audio kind of at the microscopic level, but doing the exact same thing to your audio as it would be doing to that dialogue that we heard. And on unsupported tape paths, if you have long ones, you can actually develop a vibration in the 3,000 to 5,000 hertz range, again, at a microscopic level. But we can measure it now with this clarity process. So what would that look like? Well, here's a graph. And this was this engineer's 10K alignment tone. Of course, his oscillator isn't so good. He's about 10,200 hertz. But we can see the fast flutter artifacts that modulate the 10K on either side. And notice that they're in the, well, somewhere around the high minus 30 dB range. You know, that's kind of in the area of audible hearing. And of course, the rest of the noise floor working down around the minus 50 range. After the processing with clarity, we've tightened up the 10K to be absolutely rock solid stable, and the fast flutter artifacts that have modulated that 10K have disappeared, and overall we've stabilized the noise floor kind of below the area of actual audibility. We're down about minus 70 dB, certainly in that very, very low area of what we might call tape noise. In film, we talk about sprocket cogging, which is a 96 hertz artifact. Now, it's not the 96 hertz of perf buzz where you would actually have the light and photocell picking up the perfs and creating 96 hertz. What we have here is, even on the best transports, you can see how much slop there is between the perf and the sprocket that drives it. And this creates a 96 hertz jitter on the film, again, microscopically. And we can show that also in the clarity process. This happens to be a 10K alignment tone that we made at Chase. I'm glad to say our 10K is a little better. We're at 10,016 hertz, so that's a lot better alignment. But notice the 96 hertz sidebands that have been modulated by that sprocket cogging. And this stuff is really, this is at minus 30 dB. I mean, that's what we would call film noise. And so after the clarity processing, you notice how beautifully rock solid the 10K has become. Now, we have not eliminated the sideband, but we have stabilized it. And so, again, in the field of sound restoration, we know if we have a very precise frequency you want to go after, if we only need one filter as opposed to a handful of filters, less is more. We're probably going to achieve a much better result with a lot less work. So it's a really neat process, as you can see, that really brings this noise floor down something quite dramatically. So I have one last example that I want to play of this, which gives an example kind of this idea of kind of just stabilizing the audio and making it sound better. And it's from Seven Brides. And I think you're ready to go.
Oh, yes, them sobbing women. Oh, yes, them sobbing women. Oh, yes, them sobbing women. And though there'll be a sobbing for a while, we're gonna make them sobbing women.
Was committed to the tape or the film. And as Jamie is about to tell you, or before maybe even put to a disc or even a wire recording, you brought that today, right? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of neat as we continue to experiment. Now, after this morning's sessions, if you want to come by our table in the room next door, we have some CD examples, and you're all welcome to pick one up, along with a kind of little clever flyer that also gives a little very brief, again, recap of what that technology does. You just have to say, Bob sent me, and Scott there will be happy to hand them out. And Jamie, you want to talk a little bit? And I think
absolutely.
You want to go from right there?
Would
and
you,
then maybe we do a little question and answer.
Question and answer. Could you back up to the slide that had the sprocket cogging? Right there, that guy there. Okay. Hi, my name is Jamie Howarth. I'm the president of Plantar Processes. We're the company that designed and built the system. And we're really proud of it. We'd like to ask if you'd like to hear anything else again or any of the demos that we show here later on, just pipe up, because I know sometimes it's not really easy to hear these things in a venue such as this. I'd like to play the Seven Brides one more time, because what it'll show is, as Bob was saying, the noise floor drops quite a bit down, but it's a noise floor that we're not accustomed to thinking of in terms of analog audio. It's not an analog noise. It's actually FM noise. Now, what's going on here is that's plus or minus speed. That's where the guy's ahead of speed, and that's the guy's below speed. And the rate of change at which that's happening, as you can see here, that's 96 hertz. Now, what's going on here is that variation has been dropped down to next to nothing, and the spike that you see here is actually the AM. That actually is perf buzz, traditional perf buzz. But as you can see, there's no frequency modulation on it. That's just pure AM. Now, the difference between obviously AM and FM, everybody knows. But what wasn't clearly understood, and really is a result of our having put this together and listened to it, is how much the FM modulation, the sideband distortion, if you will, was under-specced by the NAB years ago and was misunderstood in terms of its audibility. That is best shown, I think, in this set, not by any of those, but by the Seven Brides. Now, without leading you, I would like to just say that what happens with high-frequency flutters such as the 96 hertz flutter here, is there's a blurring. It's a very fast blurring. If the flutter is slow enough that you catch it as a gargle, that's one thing. But as it starts to pick up speed, as it gets into 20, 30 hertz, it starts to become a little bit of a, a buzz, and then it starts, as you can imagine, it's ring modulating the entire audio. So it ends up being perceived as a furriness, and that's quite clear in this example.
Oh, yes, them sovereign women. Oh, yes, them sovereign women. Oh, yes, them sovereign women. And though they'll be a sovereign for a while, we're gonna make them sovereign women. Sobbing for a while, we're gonna make them sobbing women smile.
So people have asked us if that's EQ or if that's anything else going on in there, but it isn't. That's purely a result of the reduction of the speed variations, the reduction of the flutter that causes the chestiness that you hear in him in the original. And it really does have some interesting effects on performance, which I think is really key. It's not just a technical thing. You feel more of a presence. There is more of a clarity there. There's more definition, and the intentionality of the singer comes forward as it would with less problems. There is nothing in nature that does flutter. We don't have Doppler that works like this, okay? And every process up until digital had that. And a really interesting anecdote from a really good drummer named Jim Keltner, who was one of the Steely Dan drummers, and he talked about how they would come out of the studio and into the control room and listen to a take, and they'd say, oh, we were great, we were great, we were great, we were great, and then they'd listen to it, and they go, were we jiving ourselves? And because of the fact that just that much micro-timing differential was enough in there, the drummers could pick up on the lack of groove. And they liked when digital came in, they didn't like some of the other artifacts of it, but they did like the fact that it was rock solid, timing-wise. I'd like to show you some stuff that goes back way before that, some of it, and these were done with a new process that we've come up with that's just about ready for prime time, but I'd like to show it today. It is a way of tracking things in existing recordings. These are mostly either from CD or from, in one case, it's an original source, but these are all from a CD, from a 78, or from a wire, or from in the case, there's one tape. Anyway, I'll just show you what they are. Let me just hear these here. I'll be bummed. Is that it? That guy there. Okay. Perhaps you've heard that before. That's, I don't know what it is. And that's not perfect, but it's real close. And that's done by tracking the 60 hertz remnant in the recording. Actually, 50 hertz remnant in the recording is British. Much more stable.
Put on your
shoes. What's that?
That's fast forward.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Little Bessie Smith.
I can say that for
performance comes forward. This is from the Library of Congress. This is from the Top 50. This is the Trinidad Lovey Steel Band from 1912. This is from a cylinder. Where am I? There we are.
We'd like to thank the studios and everyone who permits us to experiment a little bit with their stuff. I think we should point out that, Jamie, the stuff you were just working there was material you've just taken off a commercial CD.
Yes, those were all from
to just CDs, experiment with.
With the exception of the last one, which was pulled off the LOC site.
And then there's, of course, the brain trust at Plangium Processes, and the head brain. The great people at Chase who helped me put together our presentations. And I think we have a couple of minutes for some questions and answers.
I see an analog to what you're doing with what we've all done, using 60 hertz to find the overall speed of a record. And of course, if you use the higher frequency you go for your touchstone, of course, then you do it all through the recording. On the Bessie Smith, was that using the 60 hertz tone, or, I mean, it seems to me like we speed the entire record make certain it's the correct speed.
Mm-hmm.
Are you then using the 60 hertz tone for her recording to do it discreetly all the way through?
Or? Without getting too far into what's proprietary, it's actually not only the 60 hertz tone. What we try to do is analyze the fact that it's a jungle down there. Anything under about 80 hertz is just bizarre, and there's an awful lot going on. And the algorithm looks for anything at any moment that's periodic. Whatever we can find on a moment-by-moment basis. In that case, if I remember correctly, there was a 60 hertz, there was a 24 hertz in there someplace. And obviously, as the different cutters had different bearing sizes and different pulley sizes and whatnot, you'll see different rotational aspects that seem really off the wall. But if they persist for any length of time, then we can grab them and we use them. But we never, very rarely do we ever rely just on one because it's really ugly looking. So we do try to get the stuff on pitch, though, obviously. But that's, you know, that's the, yes, sir?
Well, it sounds like some of what you're doing is like the, you know, resolving, you know, the normal sync sound, like the 14K sync, except that you're pulling it out of the audio. Are you also pulling it, because you mentioning the Bessie Smith, there would be no 60 cycle because it was an acoustical recording. Are you also working like with surface noise?
There's still rotational noises at 60 hertz. It may be an acoustical recording, but there's still AM and FM at 60 hertz. As a result of it having been an 1800 RPM motor, it just stands. There's 30 and a 60 and a variety of different things.
They were using gravity driven motors.
Well, but they still spun, didn't they? Well, we see 1.3, 2.6, 5.2, a whole series of rotational aspects.
Some of that might be governor.
They may be governor. They may be, who knows what they are. You know what? In my business, I don't really care what they are.
Where it came from.
You know what I mean? Honest to God. All I want to know is they run continuously from one end of the recording to the other. And the fact that they have a one-to-one relationship, or hopefully a one-to-one relationship, it's not always one-to-one either, that's another thing that's part of the trick, is that they actually modulate along with the audio.
Have you tried out-of-round blue amberol cylinders?
I don't know what that Lovey was. I don't know that it was blue amberol or what it was. Well, if it was wax, no, I haven't tried blue amberol, but really it isn't medium-dependent. It's
well, the thing is that is the major problem of blue amberol cylinders. and there is a consistent 160 RPM.
Well, we'll see that. We'll also see the actual harmonics of that out around us, which, again, without giving away too much, that's part of it, is tracking some of the AM. The bias version tracks FM predominantly. This version, which we're working on, is a combination of both FM and AM. Yes, sir. Needs to stop.
We really have to wrap. Well, we'll be next door.
Yeah, we'll be next door
at the break, and why don't you come on by, and we'll be happy to answer the questions.
Monopolize.
Yeah, no, we have to move on. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Thank you. Good.
Yeah, we're good.